Translation: when the living entity becomes exactly like a monkey, jumping from one branch to another, he remains in the tree of household life without any profit but sex. Thus he is kicked by his wife, just like a he-ass. Unable to gain release, he remains hopelessly in that position. Sometimes he falls victim to an incurable disease, which is like falling into a mountain cave. He becomes afraid of death, which is like the elephant in the back of that cave. And he remains stranded, grasping at the twigs and branches of a creeper. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The precarious condition of a householder's life is described herein. A householder's life is full of misery, and the only attraction is sex with the wife who kicks him during sexual intercourse, just as the she-ass does her mate. Due to continuous sex life, he falls victim to many incurable diseases. At that time, being afraid of death, which is like an elephant, he remains hanging from the twigs and branches of a tree, just like a monkey. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Amagyan Timrandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pongum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Shri Rupa Shri Sanatana Bhatta Raguna Shri Jiva Gopal Bhatta Dasa Raguna Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupakada Mayam Darati Swapadantikam Namo Mahabharanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishna Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Tavasmi Radhika Natha, Karmana Manasagira, Krishna Kante Tavaivasmi, Yuva Meva Gatir Mama, Govinda Valabe Radhe, Partaye Tvamaham Sadam, Tvadiya Iti Janatu, Govindo mam tvaya saha Radhe vrindavanadishe karunam ritavahini Kripaya nija padabja dasyam mahyam pradiyatam Tvaivasmi najivami tvaya vina Iti vigyaya devi tvam nayamam charanantikam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha, Kripasindubhya eva cha, Patithanam bhavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo Namaha. We continue to hear Jadbharat's instructions to Maharaj Ruhugana, comparing the material world to a dangerous forest and the living entity to a traveler wandering in that forest, looking for something, not quite sure what, looking for happiness and trying in so many ways to find it. But at every time, finding that those endeavors are frustrated. Yeah. So here we have the example, one of the ways that the living entity tries for happiness, and it's a primary mode for seeking happiness in this world is through sex life. And we're given very vivid imagery of the frustration the living entity experiences in that endeavor to find happiness through sex life. The languages of he approaches the wife, she kicks him, but these are two males speaking with one another, Jad Bharat speaking to a king, Rahugana. They equally apply, so they're using the male gendered language, but they equally apply to the female as well. If it were two queens or a queen, a female rishi or a saint like Gargi speaking to a queen, then they might use female gendered language. The instructions apply equally, either way, whether male or female. The idea is to understand how we try for happiness in this world, and a primary mode of seeking happiness is sex life and the frustration that comes as a consequence of that. We are told how the living entity makes so much endeavor to in family life. We enter into people generally enter into family relationship. One of the primary motives there is sex attraction, the attraction between the male and the female. That is a primary drive in this material world. And so people fall in love. Yes, it has something to do with the other person's qualities and character, but it also has much to do with sex attraction. The male and the female are naturally attracted to one another, and when there is contact, either at a distance, contact through the eyes, or contact with the skin, then that sex desire can become strongly aroused. And once contact is made, then people enter into an emotional bond, an emotional relationship. Commitments are made to one another. And then what we're reading in this verse and in this purport is that what initially appears so appealing and attractive, quickly it turns into a lot of hard work, a lot of endeavor, a lot of struggle. Two souls living together, trying to live one life together, but having different desires and aspirations and values, and they are in conflict with each other and causing so much of frustration. So the verse says the only profit in the relationship, at some point there's so much struggle and so much endeavor to be with one another, the only profit is sex. I'll read the line. When the living entity becomes exactly like a monkey jumping from one branch to another, he remains in the tree of household life without any profit but sex. Thus he gets kicked, just like a he-ass. So with all of that struggle and with all of that endeavor, the only thing that's making it worthwhile after some point, it happens in materialistic relationships, the only thing that's making it worthwhile is that we get to have sex from time to time. That opportunity to have sex with one another is what's keeping us here. Otherwise, it's so much struggle, frustration, anger. Even where I'm living in the apartment building, the neighbors below me, quite frequently we get to hear the explosions of their of their anger and arguments and screaming at one another. And it's Unfortunately, in Kali Yuga, it's more and more of a common occurrence. That fighting, that quarrel, even violence, domestic violence is a major problem in our society. So that's the hot wars, yeah, when there's when there's arguments and quarrel and violence against one, that's the hot war. If there's not a hot war in the relationship, then often there's a cold war going on. And that's when there's the violence is not physical or aggressively verbal, but it's this cold relationship of not speaking to one another, not engaging with one another, avoiding one another. And so between hot wars and cold wars, these can come to dominate a relationship. And so why are people staying together? There is some sex attraction. There is some chemistry between them that's keeping them with one another. Now, in a higher culture, then it is dharma that keeps them together. In a higher culture, in a higher society, then they wouldn't just come together because of physical attraction in the first place. There would be a lot of screening and different ways of screening. The parents would be discussing with one another, understanding the nature of their children. Different ways of screening, astrological compatibility would also be looked into in order to understand that they really are, there is a possibility that these two souls with different desires and inclinations in this world, because we're all individuals here, can find some unity in the relationship. And once the physical attraction that is so dominant in the beginning of a relationship, once that dies down, then there's still something that can hold the relationship together. Because in the first 2 years of the relationship, the hormones are what might be the glue keeping that bond. The hormones, this is the chemistry of love. Actually, there are papers written on this stuff, scientific paper. The chemistry of love, I'd probably even find a book. The chemistry of love is about hormones, and it makes a euphoria. When the male comes in contact, when a woman is feeling attraction for a man, her body emits hormones. And when a male comes in contact with those hormones, he feels it's like an intoxication. It's a euphoric intoxicant. And we think, oh, I'm in love. Some hormones. Similarly for the female. And so that hormone exchange is, it's a chemical, just like you can get chemical drugs. This is a chemical intoxicating experience, and we can lose our intelligence in that euphoric, experience that we call love. Generally, that after 2 years in a relationship, then those hormones they gradually die down, and there's no more of that buzz. And in Western societies, then people go, oh, I'm just not feeling the love anymore. It's just that chemistry is not here anymore. So they break off the relationship and they go and try and fall in love again somewhere else so they can taste the chemicals again. Another chemical high. And that's the Western idea, the Western concept. For many people, that's the Western idea of what it means to be in love. It's the superficial chemical exchange that's there. But in the traditional understanding of the Bhagavad culture, then it is understood that, yes, in the beginning there is a chemical, they won't call it like that, but there is a euphoric experience. But there needs to be more than that to hold the relationship together. So what we're reading about here is the materialistic mode, where the only thing is sex, and that's what brings people together. That's what might keep them together afterwards. Yeah, we have kids, what to do? It's a lot of suffering, but we have kids here. And after all, I do get some sex from time to time, so I'm in for the long haul. But what needs to be there? What profit could be there other than sex? That's what's important. So in the life of a Vaishnava, in the householder life, the family relationship of a Vaishnava, there is profit other than sex. And that's the understanding that this soul, this other person, in a male body or a female body, yeah, the opposite gender, this person whom I'm attracted to on the sexual, physical level, can also be my savior. Because if I'm not attracted to her, then my attention will be in other places. Or if it's not him, then my attention will be in other places. And so, by focusing that attention on one person who is a Vaishnava, who is a devotee, and working together as a team to channel that attraction that is there towards working together to overcome attachment to family life and sex life. So there is a value that is deeper than the physical sex, but it's a transmuting, like an alchemist. The alchemist transmutes. Oh, they used to try, yeah. In the Middle Ages, the alchemist would be there trying to change metal into gold, and it was a project that philosophers engaged in for hundreds of years in Europe. Even in India, there is a tradition of turning bell metal to gold. Rupa Goswami discusses it. In Europe, there was also a project for hundreds of years of the alchemist, the philosopher. They're trying to figure out the chemical compounds. Nowadays, we'll be a scientist, but people have given up on it. Trying to convert the chemical compounds of metal and how to restructure them that they will be gold. And so that is called alchemy. But the Vaishnava will be an alchemist in that they turn this sex desire that is there, they engage with it rather than repressing it or denying it or trying to run away from it. If it is there, then the Vaishnava will engage with it to become purified of it. So by entering into Grihastha Ashram, falling in love, expressing that love, having that chemical, emotional experience, also having children, but by staying with that person and working together to engage in devotional service, then gradually purifying that inclination or that desire that one is gradually freed of it. Now, that's one aspect. The other is working together to invest one's affection in Krishna. Krishna and Krishna's devotees, tadyanam samachanam. So that is the profit for the devotee. The devotee has a profit in family life beyond sex. Beyond sex, beyond subtle sex. So subtle sex is adoration, distinction, social prestige. We work together to build a big house and have a car and little kids, and then we feel normal in our society or special in our society. So that's subtle sex. So beyond the physical and subtle sex, the devotee is working. The devotee has another profit, and that is you and I are going to work together. We will focus our attention on one another rather than everywhere out in the world. on other males or females. We'll focus our attentions on one another. We will work together with one another. We will serve one another, support one another, and go through this family life together and gradually become purified of that need for association with the opposite sex, that we can be fully invested in our affection for Krishna. That other males or females, whatever our gendering might be, there will not be a distraction to us. Gradually, through this purifying process of the Grihastha Ashram. So that is the profit for the devotee. And therefore, the devotee embraces those who have that need or inclination. They will embrace Grihastha Ashram as a great opportunity for purification. Sometimes devotees, they might understand, oh, I should enter into Grihastha Ashram, and then they enter it with resentment. Yes, I have attraction for the opposite gender, so I need to enter Grihastha Ashram, but they resent it, and they resent their partner as well. They resent the wife, or they resent the husband, because I'm attached now, I'm stuck with you. And so they make offenses. Offenses to the devotee, that is their wife or their husband. So that will not purify. The brahmachari understands, with guidance from guru, from other Vaishnavas, that it would be helpful for them to enter Grihastha Ashram. It will not be helpful to enter with that resentment. I have my spiritual ideals. Now I understand I should enter Grihastha Ashram. But this is a step down for me, and I resent you for that. And so therefore, treating the wife badly or treating the husband badly, that will actually not give the profit that we are seeking in the ashram, which is purification from this attachment for the opposite sex, because you're not engaging. You're engaging with anger. But the process is to engage that affection that we have for the opposite sex. You engage in that affection in one person. You're investing that in one person, in a devotee. So in Krishna's devotee, when you invest that affection in Krishna's devotee, it purifies. When you go through a life together, you face the challenges that life inevitably throws at you, at all of us, whether brahmachari or grihastha or sannyasi. Life will inevitably throw challenges. Those are our opportunities for growth. And for a grihastha couple, when they embrace those challenges together, face those challenges together, that's purifying for them. There is mutual growth. So they give one another strength. Yeah, they double their strength facing those challenges together. But if they are at war with one another, thinking of the accusing, blaming the other as the cause of their downfall, then they will not actually be able to face those challenges. Those challenges will get the better of them. Becoming a grihastha and engaging in the grihastha ashram means to engage with affection, channeling that affection. And dedication, understanding that the wife or the husband are my opportunity for advancement and progression in Krishna consciousness, for purifying the inclination. Otherwise, as I stated earlier, and as Krishna is quoting Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, what will repression accomplish? Prabhupada says the verse itself says that sometimes the living entity falls victim to incurable diseases, which are like falling into a mountain cave. Yeah. So, the living entity who does not enter into a monogamous relationship, into a dutiful relationship of marriage, Then they're having sex here and there and everywhere. And the likelihood of contracting disease is very prominent. And we have such terrible diseases in our society today. AIDS is a recent disease, but one that has no cure. In the 1960s, there was a philosophy of sexual freedom, free love, free sex. And we were speaking about it yesterday from the verse. The philosophy was that for so long people have repressed themselves by the social laws and rules, the norms of society, and this has, you know, screwed people up mentally. And so, let's break free of those bonds of social convention and be free individuals. And so through the 60s and 70s, there was a culture that was dominant in our society. There's a term for it, sexual liberation. And so that was very dominant in our society. And then in the 1980s, something very terrible became apparent, that people were dying of this sexually transmitted disease called AIDS, a disease for which there was no cure. And initially they said, yeah, that's homosexuals that are getting this disease. And so anyone who got the disease was demonized. They are the deviant. They have gotten this disease because of, you know, homosexual activity. But then very prominent movie stars started to get that disease. And the family members of politicians started to get that disease as well. And when politicians' relatives get a disease like that, when a family member or someone close to a family member of the President of the United States gets a disease like that, then people start to look with more empathy and sympathy rather than demonizing the person for having the disease. They started to look actually at the disease as a problem in society. And they understood that the sex is not limited. This disease is not limited to homosexuals. Anyone who's engaging in promiscuous sex can get AIDS and herpes and so many other STDs, sexually transmitted diseases. And so what you saw through the mid-80s into the 90s was a curbing of that sexual promiscuity in society. It's not nearly as prominent now. You might be surprised to know, younger generations, that it is not nearly as prominent now as it was in the 70s and 80s. Society has become much more conservative sexually than it was in those times. Bhagavatam's called it, yeah? By engaging in promiscuous sex, there is sexual diseases that come as a result. Bhagavatam itself calls it, and we saw it in a very dramatic way in this last century, 1970s, 1980s. We started to see the effect of what the Bhagavatam discusses here. But we saw it in a dramatic way, a whole population that got into sexual freedom, and then we saw the impact of that with this. It was declared as an epidemic, herpes and AIDS. And then laws were enacted in order to curtail it again. And we're more conservative now. Society is more conservative now than it was then. Okay, so that's one aspect to the sexual diseases that come from illicit sex. But there is another aspect. The verse says, he becomes afraid of death just like an elephant in the back of a cave. He remains stranded, grasping to twigs and branches of a creeper. That's one aspect. There is another aspect that is more subtle. That is not discussed here in the verse specifically, but we can extend from it. And that is when there is sex desire, and that sex desire is very strong, and it is denied or repressed. That can also give rise not to physical disease, but to mental disease. So it also needs a channel of expression, and therefore we have the Grihastha ashram given to us in Varnashram society. So too much of a thing is a problem. If too little of a thing, I don't want to say that. Too little of a thing when there is that need in the condition, when the conditioned soul has that need, then the proper, appropriate channel is given for us to engage it. Just like Arjuna is a Kshatriya, so his need is to fight and protect society. Now, if he does not engage it properly, then he's just fighting, yeah, and that's wrong. If he's just fighting out of emotion or anger, that's wrong. But if he's fighting in the proper way, that is fighting for Dharma, then that is his purification. Yeah? So if there is that strong sexual desire and it is repressed, that is not healthy for the person, for their spiritual progress, because it will pop out the other side as this uncontrolled sex life. So either way, too little of a thing, too much of a thing are a problem. We need to find the appropriate balance. Now, for the brahmachari that doesn't have that sex desire, then there is no need, or for little, or for regulation. They can basically, naishtika brahmachari and sannyas, there is no need for that thing. But if that inclination is there and it's tugging on the mind and it is repressed, that can give rise to mental disturbance. And that mental disturbance can lead to rampant illicit sex. And so mental disease or physical disease are the two sides of the equation. Grihastha ashram, that is regulated and dutiful, is the balancing remedy. Yeah? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, that thing which is the cause of the disease, when it is applied therapeutically, becomes the cure. And the example that is given is of milk. Milk can cause, in the summer in India, the stomach to heat up. And so, bad stomach comes from drinking milk in the summer. The cure is milk applied therapeutically as yogurt that cools the stomach. So the same thing applied therapeutically can be the cure. So sex life is sex desire is a disease of the conditioned soul. Applied therapeutically means applied in Grihastha ashram, and it can lead to the cure when it is in ashram with Vaishnava dedicated to overcoming the problem and pleasing Krishna. Yeah, so we have discussed the materialistic approach to sex life, where sex becomes the where sex is the main profit, and it is a frustrating endeavor, and that sex is physical but also subtle. The living entity has to tolerate so much trouble in order to get that small profit, and then we've also explained or discussed that. How the Vaishnava engages with that, with the desire to overcoming and purifying, and therefore actually embraces the ashram and embraces their partner with affection and dedication, embraces the actual ashram as an opportunity for their purification rather than resenting it. And we have discussed also the disease that is that comes from irregulated sex, and how regulated sex life can be a cure for that disease. Now, when a brahmachari hears all of this, someone who is a brahmachari and should be a brahmachari, they hear, oh my God, so much trouble. So much struggle. I'm not going near that. And so, good for them. When someone who has that inclination that they should be in the brahmachari ashram, when they hear all of this, they just think it's too much, it's too messy, too complicated and messy, I don't want to be near that. So it strengthens their resolve. When a grihastha hears this, they are able to acknowledge, yes, I am, or someone who is a grihastha or should be going towards the grihastha ashram, when they hear this, they go, yeah, I can identify with that attraction. I can identify with that wandering mind. I can identify with that attraction coming up in different quarters. So I should be thinking towards regulated grihastha life, towards finding a partner who's not just physically attractive to me, but emotionally compatible and devotionally compatible as well. Someone with whom I can work on this project of becoming Krishna conscious together, and overcoming sexual desire and attraction and inclination, which is binding me, keeping me caught up here in the material world. So we will hear the same discussion, the same instructions, and based on our Adhikar, on our qualification, we will register and come to different conclusions about how to apply them in our lives, because we are different people. Okay, so I'll conclude there. If there are any comments or questions. Yes, Prabhu? Thank you.
Just to say, the end part, he says that he remains stranded grasping at twigs and branches of the creeper.
It's relating to his fear of death. Due to continuous sex life, he falls victim to many incurable diseases. Physical, emotional, senility, being senile, that's also related to too much sex. The end of the life, older person is supposed to be a wise, valued member of society who can give their wisdom to society. But if they've engaged in so much sex, they don't have any, they're senile, they don't have any, there is no wisdom to give because they're not thinking properly, they can't think properly. And so, they've just lived so that at the end of their life, they're no wiser. They're a victim of their own rampant sex life. And so death for them is great fear. Death for the Vaishnava. Dhruva Maharaj, he stood on the step of the head of death to enter into his Vaikuntha Viman, Vaikuntha aeroplane. Vaishnava will embrace death as here's the doorway, stargate, back to Godhead. So it's no fear for the devotee, but for the person who's lived only for sex. Superficial relationships of sex. Then death is a great fear. And so they remain hanging on to the twigs and branches. What could that be?
I understood it as kids.
Kids, okay. All right. Could be children, could be... Whatever those, subtle sex means building up your material prosperity. So whatever home or car or whatever you have, and that's your attachment, and family members standing around to take it away from you. But yeah, yes, Prabhu.
The scrippers and pigs are the fallible soldiers, like you said. I mean, because when a person is dying, he's clinging on to every bit of straw he can hold on to, thinking that will give him security.
Right.
But you see, a creeper itself is depending on someone else. Creeper is never independent. Hold on to people, you have to strong, you fall down.
Good.
Therefore, he does not give solace or help or support.
Yeah.
And he is thinking all his life, I've built all this to give my security. My assets.
Yeah. Right, very good. Mm-hmm. Good, thank you. Somebody else? Yeah.
Another question.
Yeah, sure.
Could you please explain how exactly the Grihastha Ashram facilitates its purpose in terms of making the man and the woman detached from each other? Because at least from what I've seen is that, from what I've observed is that in a relationship like a marriage, the man and the woman actually get more and more attached and more and more dependent on each other as the years progress. So by the time they're like 50 or 60 years old, they're, you know, really good friends. So how does the Grihastha Ashram actually facilitate attachment?
Yeah, okay. So the question here is, did everyone hear the question? Over there, did you hear the question?
No.
Yeah. How does the Grihastha Ashram facilitate detachment? Gradually becoming detached, because in his experience he's seen that through the years the husband and wife become more and more attached, and they become very, very close friends. Yeah, if things go well, they become closer and closer. you certainly see that. Well, to begin with, when one is committed to one partner, then one is detached from everything else that's going on around. Yeah, so it's the attachment is invested in one person. Now, if that person is a devotee, and you're both devotees, then is your both of you have heard so many instructions from Bhagavatam, from the Bhagavad Gita. You've heard the instructions, but still there is an inclination, sexual desire. You both know it's something that you want to overcome. So by being committed to one another through life and serving one another, those realizations become deeper and deeper. Yeah? Your affection for Krishna becomes stronger and stronger. And so while you're... friendship might grow strong, so that's also there's already a benefit there. It's moved from sexual attraction to friendship. So while that may go stronger, but you're realizing together, you're realizing the teachings of the Shastra together, and so your detachment from the material world is also increasing. So it's everything around you, you're becoming more and more detached from. And so the relationship of friendship might become stronger, but your attachment to the material world is weaker and weaker. Yeah? To the point where, at least in the higher varnas, then there may be strong friendship, but you understand that as friends it's time for us to part. Yeah? As friends, we say goodbye. Maybe like that. Yeah, so the male will take sannyas, or they might, as vanaprastas, travel to holy places together. So we are together, we're supporting one another, but the realization is that we're done with the material world. Yeah? Attachments, all of those things that we were so attached, we're ready to let them go. Does that make sense? Yeah? Somebody else? Vijay Prabhu?
Mm-hmm. Prabhupada given that very strict standard of, you know, if I'm in Grihastha Ashram, you know, you have sex once a month and children, that's obviously a very strict standard.
Yeah.
We sort of tend to see in this kind of, you know, especially, you know, Western values, it seems like they're almost impossible for the test. And so my question is that outside of that, like you're talking about engaging that propensity to purify, does that have to be within that very, you know, strict standard of, you know, only sex for procreation, or outside of that, is it still going to be, you know, somewhat purifying, or is this breaking that vow going to be entangling?
Yeah. Okay. When you read Prabhupada's books, you can actually find Prabhupada defines illicit sex as sex outside of marriage, also as sex that is within marriage and not within marriage but for the purpose of procreation. So Prabhupada gives a wide definition and a narrow definition. You can find both in his books. But your question about which will be more purifying, obviously the higher standard, that's the aspiration. But as we were giving class, I think, 2 weeks ago, and we talked about sex and how sex can be most entangling or purifying, and we gave a gradation from rape, where there is no respect for the other, to meeting at the bar, where there's a mutual agreement to exploit one another, but actually no relationship or concern for the other, to... the boyfriend-girlfriend relationship of convenience, to commitment, to marriage, to... Yeah, so you can see at one end is totally entangling, and gradually there's less reaction, yeah, as you go up the scale. And then when you come to commitment, there's actually some purification because there's sacrifice that's being made there. Even in a non-devotee relationship, there's some purification in the sacrifice that's made to the other partner and to the children. Now in Krishna consciousness, then it's a higher level again. So there's a scale. Yeah? And so the higher standard would be the more purifying. But the lower standard, it's more entangling. It's more entangling, but definitely not as entangling as sex outside of marriage or sex, yeah. So those other manifestations of sex life. So it's like this. When Narada Muni gave instruction to Magrari the hunter, he said, better you kill the animals completely rather than half kill them. So is Narada Muni advocating the killing of animals? He's not. Narada Muni never advocates the killing of animals. But here he's instructing a hunter, rather than half kill the animals that they suffer so much, you kill them fully. That's much better for you. It will be less entangling. Yeah? So there is, you know, there's the scale. You half kill the animals, the reaction is much greater. You fully kill them, it's also sinful, but the reaction will be less for you. Now, better you don't kill them at all. Yes? So better is no sex. That's Brahmachari sannyas. That's the best. If there is an inclination towards sex, you better you have sex in marriage. And then better still is for the procreation of children. And Prabhupada said, once a month for the procreation of children. So then how many times do you want to have children? That many times there will be sex in the relationship. Does that satisfy your question? Yes. Yeah? Yes, Prabhu?
In the economy, people are okay for marriage and divorce.
Mm.
In the Vaishnava life, also divorce, and they know everything.
Mm. Yeah.
So many, they know everything in the Shastra, so many senior Vaishnava, so many years living in Ashram, they still have a problem or divorce. Why is it coming back?
Why is it coming?
Yeah.
It's coming because we are conditioned souls. So, yeah, so there's the standard that Prabhupada gives, that is given in the Shastra. Although in the Manu there is, or in Artha Shastra, there is some discussion about when divorce might take place as well. That is there in Artha Shastra. But generally, the standard is that there is no divorce. But we are conditioned souls, so we try our best to follow the teachings as they are given. But all of us, we stumble, we fall, we trip. Yeah, when you're going on a journey to the mountaintop, you're going to fall. You are going to stumble, you're going to trip over. And so the only thing to do is to pick yourself up and keep walking. Yeah? So brahmacharis will fall down, sannyasis will fall down, grihasthas will fall down. Yeah, all of us, we will experience problems in our ashrams. The point is not to give up, or not to say it is not possible, or not to try, but it is to pick yourself up and to keep trying to make progress in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada says no divorce, but Prabhupada himself is giving permission to disciple, okay, better you divorce. Right? So the standard is there, that is the ideal for how we should live. But how we practically apply it in our lives, that is up to the conditioned nature of the living entity and their ability to apply that guideline in their life. Yeah, so that's a lot more fluid. Standard gives us a framework. We have a framework in the standard. And then how we are able to apply that in our lives, it is... The framework gives us a guideline, but we are always moving in and out of that guideline according to our conditioned nature and the strength of our determination to overcome that. So we're just over time. I didn't take any questions. Any ladies have any questions? Okay, thank you all very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya, samaveta bhaktarindi ki jaya, nitai gaur premanandi.